it all gets taken away. Death arrives, ready or not, and it simply isn't fair. Sometimes it doesn't go that way. When you work in a hospital, you have the unique privilege and opportunity to walk through life's final steps with families. A good death, if you can even wrap your mind around that phrase, is one when the family has an opportunity to say goodbye. They know and have accepted what is happening, and they're all gathered together, and their loved one slips away peacefully. Unfortunately, a good death is not often what we see. Usually, death just happens, and it's not fair. We don't plan for it. It sneaks up, and it disrupts the life we were planning for ourselves. Jesus' death was far from this notion of a good death. It was not fair. He was tortured and brutalized for crimes he did not commit, but for which he willingly and obediently went to the cross. His death was, however, preceded by many of the markers we see in some of those hospice-type death experiences. The night before he died, Jesus gathered his friends together for a meal. He washed their feet and gave them ways to remember him. Jesus instituted the Last Supper in a ceremony of leave-taking. He was saying goodbye, even if they couldn't quite hear it. Even that wasn't enough, though. Despite the many verses of warning and foreshadowing that come even before that night in our Gospels, it came as a surprise to those with Jesus. Jesus's family and friends are taken by surprise when Judas arrives with his kiss and his waiting soldiers. Denial plays a large role in the story that we walk this week. Good Friday is the horrible day when reality dawns. Peter has denied Jesus three times, the disciples have scattered, and Jesus is left to face Pilate and ultimately his own death. The people he came to save scream vile, hateful things at him as he drags his own implement of torture up a hill to the spot where his life will end by force. It's not fair. In Kate Braestrup's autobiography, Here If You Need Me, she details her experiences as a chaplain for the Maine Warden's Service, serving almost exclusively in search and rescue missions in the Maine woods, a place of such beauty, but also such dark terror for these families who are desperately searching for their loved ones. But she introduces her tale by sharing the moment in her life when everything changed, her own dark moment that enabled her to do this work. Reverend Braestrup's husband, Drew, was a Maine State Trooper. Early one morning, shortly after kissing her and leaving the house for work, just a few miles from their home, his cruiser was broadsided by a box truck, killing him instantly. He was still alive when the paramedics arrived and could not get him loose from the vehicle. Braestrup sat at the scene and watched his soul be released from his body. And she recalls with poignancy the ordinariness of the day when she received the call that forever changed her life. His white cereal bowl, half full with milk, sitting in the stainless steel kitchen sink. The covers of their bed still twisted, and the faint outline of where he lay the night before. Braestrup writes that love begins with a body. whether romantic or otherwise, we encounter people physically, and it is our senses that first form opinions and feelings towards another. Hearing someone's voice for the first time, seeing the light in their eyes, or the quirkiness of their smile, those are the things that draw us in. But it's the soul that captures us and holds us. It's the soul that we find that connection with and keeps us fast and safe in that love that we find there. Death, like love, begins as a clinically physical thing. The heart stops and the organs shut down. The cells begin to deteriorate almost immediately. But in instances of both love and of death, the physical nature is overshadowed by the emotion and soul connection shared with the individual housed in the physical form before us. Having read extensively about what the body goes through after death, Braestrup instructed the funeral director that she wanted no embalming to take place, no makeup to be put on. She would wash and dress her husband's lifeless body herself. She wanted to be the one to close the casket for the final time, and she told him that she would accompany her husband to his cremation and stay. The physical accompaniment of her husband's body would be her final act of love for him, and she would not walk away, no matter how painful. After all, Drew would do this for me, she writes. She describes the act of gently washing his cold form with a soft cloth, of straightening his state police dress uniform, and leaving the room where his empty body lay for the final time. I am his remains, she thought. It's not fair. Tonight we wait with John, the beloved disciple, with Mary, the mother of Jesus, and the other Marys at the foot of the cross. We watch in agony as the body we love is tortured, and as the curtain of heaven is torn in two, as Jesus released his soul, the soul of our beloved brother, is released back into the embrace of God. It isn't fair. But that is what makes it so painfully beautiful. Innocent though he was, Jesus drank from the cup he was given. He sacrificed himself on the cross, and he did it for us. So tonight, we'll wait and we'll cry. We'll breathe and we despair. And we will take his lifeless body down from the cross, and we will gently clean it and lay it in a tomb. It isn't fair, but it's our present reality. We are his remains. And how we walk forward from this place is a physical statement about the love that we share. We are his remains. As we breathe deeply and feel our own life-filled bodies, whatever stirs within us, we have there, thanks to God. Amen.
Amen.